Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. After almost 15 years in exile, Ayatollah Khomeini returned to Iran this morning. The archenemy of the absent Shah and of Prime Minister Bakhtiar, the man who wants Bakhtiar to resign and who wants to set up an Islamic Republic of his own, Khomeini arrived at Tehran on schedule from Paris. At the airport, he made an emotional speech denouncing foreign and colonial influence, as he called it. Then he headed for the center of Tehran. Mike Lee was there.
This is an emotional moment. The Khomeini motorcade passing by the University of Tehran, the scene of so many bloody clashes between Khomeini supporters and the Iranian military. It's right here where our car is passing that scores of young demonstrators were killed in the past week alone. So far, there's no sign of the Iranian military other than a helicopter overhead keeping watch over the motorcade. Volunteer security monitors with green armbands are trying to hold the crowd back here in front of the University of Tehran. All along this route, up until this point, the crowds have held themselves back. But here, in this area where so many people have lost their lives in support of Khomeini and in support of the revolution to bring down the current government, the crowds are just overwhelming. Mike Lee, CBS News, Tehran.
Later, in a speech at the city's largest cemetery, Khomeini said, quote, I beg to God to cut the hands off all those foreign advisors and helpers in Iran. The time of the monarchy, he said, is over. A tape recording broadcast last night by CBS News purportedly contained the voice of the Shah before he left Iran, exhorting his military commanders to shoot freely at civilians and foment civil war in his absence as a means of bringing about his return. CBS television station KNXT in Los Angeles, which obtained the tape, said experts had authenticated the voice as that of the Shah. Some others doubt it. An Associated Press reporter in Tehran, who has known the monarch for 37 years, listened to the recording by telephone and said it was definitely not the Shah. The reporter said copies of the tape have been selling in Tehran for weeks for as little as $2 to $3.
In my neighborhood, gasoline is around 70 cents a gallon. In my neighborhood, you see a lot of new Datsuns.
Datsun 79.
Introducing the amazing new Datsun 210 hatchback. Sporty, spiffy, agile, roomy, yet you'd think it runs on fumes. The Datsun 210 hatchback with optional 5-speed stick is one of the highest gas mileage new cars you can buy. It's rated 41 highway, 27 city. Your mileage may differ, but the EPA urges you to compare these figures with any other new car. The 210 hatchback is the number one gas mileage Datsun.
I love my new 210 hatchback. My gas station doesn't.
You and your dollars go further in a Datsun 210.
Nobody demands more from a Datsun than Datsun.
Give you the greatest economy of all, quality.
Deng Xiaoping, the Washington phase of his American journey at an end, is now about to take a look at other parts of the United States. This morning he's on his way to Atlanta, and John Sheehan reports what he'll see when he gets there.
Mr. Deng will have a chance to see some of the most dramatic architecture in America. He'll be staying in the world's tallest hotel, a 76-story silver column right in the center of the city. Elevators run 60 stories along the outside of the building. In the vice premier's luxury suite on the 70th floor, the exterior walls are glass. He can step to the side of the room and look past his toes almost 1,000 feet straight down. That's a thrill, but it will be a bit of a problem for anyone in the delegation who might suffer from acrophobia. Deng will visit the Ford automobile plant near Atlanta. Some of the employees on the assembly line oppose the vice premier's visit, but the company has warned them to keep their mouths shut while he's on the premises. The Chinese delegation will lunch on a beef and pineapple creation called Sirloin Tips Hawaiian as guests of the Southern Center for International Studies. Georgia Governor George Busby will host an evening banquet for the official party, while at least some of the Chinese journalists on the trip will get a taste of Southern barbecue. John Sheehan, CBS News, Atlanta.
Tomorrow, the Chinese leader flies on to Texas, and on Saturday, he'll be in Seattle. Last night, Deng thanked President Carter and Washington for what he called a highly productive visit. But Richard C. Hotellett reports that people in touch with the Chinese say their hopes were not fulfilled.
The establishment of normal relations is a great achievement for Dong because it creates the American connection essential for China's modernization, and the Chinese see that as vital for their security. But it cannot bring quick results. The sources say that Dong came with a strategic objective, a meeting of minds on the nature and urgency of the Soviet threat, which would turn the United States away from its policy of détente with the Soviet Union. That never got off the ground. President Carter kept negotiations focused on the nuts and bolts details of cooperation, emphasizing cautiously that this is a beginning. Dong acknowledged that, but he is expected to go on warning against what he sees as Soviet aggression. He has already said that China is supplying arms to the Cambodian guerrillas fighting the Vietnamese invaders. Last night, Dong spent more than an hour with Prince Sihanouk of Cambodia. Sihanouk later told CBS News reporter Diane Sawyer that he is going back to Peking. It may be that China will now build its effort against Vietnam in Cambodia around him and ask for U.S. endorsement. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, Washington.
Dong's trip remains under severe criticism in Moscow, where Bernard Redmond reports that the Kremlin is accusing him of rabid anti-Sovietism.
The latest in a series of attacks on China is a long commentary published in the Soviet Communist Party newspaper Pravda and distributed for extra emphasis by the Soviet news agency TASS. Pravda charged Dong with impudently lecturing the Carter administration by his outspoken opposition to a new Soviet-American treaty to limit strategic weapons. The themes of the Soviet attacks are that China opposes détente and a curbing of the arms race, that Peking believes in the inevitability of a new world war, and that the Chinese are joining reactionary anti-Soviet forces in talking about an alleged Soviet threat. Pravda argued that Dong is begging for U.S. handouts of military and economic aid and is striving for a united anti-Soviet front, including the U.S. and Japan. The Soviet news media have been carrying reports that China has been massing troops on the Vietnamese border and statements that Peking will not stop at any intrigues and provocations. Bernard Redmond, CBS News, Moscow.
Back in Washington, CBS News diplomatic correspondent Marvin Kalb reports that the Soviets are sticking to their official position that President Brezhnev will come to Washington to sign a new SALT agreement when the negotiations are completed. But unofficially, Kalb says, they've begun to raise the idea that maybe it would be better if President Carter went to Moscow for the summit.
What is the plushest interior of any front-wheel drive in its class? Introducing the new front-wheel drive Datsun 310. Styling that combines the best of three continents. Performance that combines the best of all possible worlds. Fully independent suspension, rack and pinion steering, power assist front disc brakes.
The inside. Tell them about the inside.
Ah, the new Datsun 310 makes you forget you're saving money. Deep plush velour seats, thick carpeting, split fold-down rear seat, remote control rear windows. If you want to know how beautiful the new Datsun 310 is, compare it to any other car in its class. No comparison.
Nobody demands more from a Datsun than Datsun. We are driven.
To back your front-wheel drive with economy, luxury, styling, quality.
If the Carter administration has its way, there soon will be a sharp reduction in passenger service provided by Amtrak, the federally subsidized rail system. Bob Faugh has details in Chicago.
Transportation Secretary Adams says it's time to quit spending staggering amounts on Amtrak. His proposed cutbacks would save over $1 billion in 5 years. He'd do it by concentrating service in high population corridors like Washington to Boston, and by slashing service drastically elsewhere. Alabama, Arkansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Vermont wouldn't get any Amtrak service at all. Already, communities there and in other areas where service would almost disappear are complaining that alternate transportation would take longer and cost more. And as passenger Benjamin Fitzgerald put it aboard the San Francisco Zephyr, without Amtrak, some passengers wouldn't have any options.
During the course of the ride, I had occasion to speak to a man who was going from one state to another to see his dentist, believe it or not. Now, I don't know how this man, without the use of this train, could get from one state to another. So it's imperative, as far as he's concerned, to have this available to him.
Congress will now study their proposals and could block them, but if neither house does within 90 days, the country in October will get a new Amtrak, slimmed down, but still losing over $500 million a year. Bob Fall, CBS News, Chicago.
About half of the country's congressional districts would be affected by the proposed cutbacks. Patricia Hearst this morning leaves federal prison a free woman. Her 7-year sentence for bank robbery was commuted this week by President Carter to time already served. We'll hear about her from Harold Dow in San Francisco.
Patricia Hearst will be 25 years old this month. When she was kidnapped by the Symeonese Liberation Army, she was 19. Her liberation from the Federal Correctional Facility in Pleasanton, California, later this morning, will be a combination of happiness and sadness. Her fiancé, Bernard Shaw, a 30-year-old San Francisco policeman, will be there to meet her. They're planning to get married in April. However, her parents, Randolph and Catherine Hearst, won't be there, as they always were in the past. After 40 years, they have separated. Close friends have said Patricia's ordeal just took its toll on them. For the last few days, Patricia Hearst has been isolated from the other inmates. Prison officials say they did it for her own protection. She is still receiving threats. And when she leaves the prison this morning, she'll be wearing a bulletproof vest. Harold Dow, CBS News, San Francisco.
Pope John Paul arrives back in Rome this morning from his visit to Mexico. En route, he made a brief late-night stop at Nassau in the Bahamas. The dollar rose again today in Tokyo, closing at 202.30 yen, and the dollar opened higher on most of the European exchanges.